So my wise colleague writes, we are all in this together. And when we're together, we choose to share song and gratitude and joy and the spaciousness to everything we bring. She calls this resistance, and she calls it cultivating moral courage, and she calls it drawing a wider circle. Each of those things deserves a sermon on its own. So today we're talking about circles. I'm usually a big picture, vision-oriented kind of thinker, and these words call to me in a big picture kind of way. And then, you know, I come up with all the metaphors, and I come up with all the wouldn't it be wonderful ifs. And then I stop and think, well, what does it actually look like to draw that wider circle? I mean, the sharing song and gratitude and joy that Reverend Gretchen writes about, that's easy, right? It looks like what we do in worship every week, and in the board retreat that I got to attend yesterday, and in the other meetings that I go to with you all. We do all of those things. Are we drawing a wider circle in these spaces? I wonder. And as I wonder, I'm reminded of a very tangible thing that happens. I'm trying to concretize myself here. When we meet to have conversations about things happening in our congregation after worship sometimes, there's this thing we do, right? We move all the chairs into a circle so we can sit where we can all see each other and hear each other. We get settled, we light a chalice, we take a breath, and we get started in our conversation. Very happy often in the knowledge that here we are. And then inevitably, someone who took a little longer to finish something else they were doing joins us. And we stop a moment and we make space. We add another chair into the circle, right? And we include. Sometimes this happens more than once, often. And so we do it again. And sometimes again, we widen the circle, right? And that's a really good thing. And I want to challenge us a little bit. I want to invite us to think together for a moment about how it feels to do that, how it feels to sit in that circle and widen it out. Personally, I have felt more than one way about that. There have been times I have felt expansive and generous about it, of course. We need to make room for latecomers. They are just as welcome as everyone else, right? We are all welcome. And if I'm the facilitator in the conversation, I often feel like I should stop, explicitly welcome them, right? Make sure they understand they're welcome, to smile warmly, say something out loud that recognizes their right to be part of this conversation, part of this circle. So I feel responsible. And to be perfectly honest, I have sometimes felt less than expansive and generous about this. I have to take a breath sometimes to give myself the chance to actually feel the welcome that I am trying to offer, because sometimes I struggle with picking up after an interruption. Do you hear the language I'm using? How can I authentically welcome someone if I'm feeling their presence as an interruption? And sometimes, if I'm going to keep being honest, the circle that's widening, right, if there's more and more people entering, becomes an oval or some amorphous shape, right, which is fine in and of itself, except that we can't necessarily all see each other anymore. And then I feel like I have to either let go of that, right, and just let it go and keep going, or introduce yet another awkward moment to ask us to shift again so we can get back to seeing each other. You see how my head gets in the way sometimes? Yeah. What a great metaphor for the discomfort that happens when we're trying to make change in the culture of a community to be more welcoming to folks who haven't found us yet. It feels pretty small to actually say out loud to you that I get uncomfortable making space for others. Yet, there it is. If this is the space of radical love that I believe it is, you will hear this and you will hold it with me. And maybe some of you feel that too sometimes and take a little solace in hearing that you're not alone. I believe that radical love is a practice, not a place, a practice. And that means it isn't always what we want it to be, so we work on it. I'm going to stick with the chairs and the circle metaphor for just another moment with another perspective. Sometimes I am the person coming into one of those circles after it's gotten started. I do tend to run a little late. And then I either project or I actually feel the awkwardness of being the person interrupting a conversation that's already gotten started just so I can be part of it. Sometimes that's hard to do. I'm an outsider trying to move into the circle. And even though it's widening to include me, I know I'm probably making people uncomfortable. So given that, it seems like there might be a couple of ways to address the discomfort in this imaginary room of a circle of chairs, or in this very real circle of community, to help people in the circle be more comfortable with changing it, and, notice I don't say or, and to help the people coming into the circle to be more comfortable looking to be included. So what does that look like? What if the circle were open when it first formed? What if our circle was a U? What if we left space for chairs to be pulled up, or maybe even and put out more chairs than we think we need, ready to be pulled in? Or what if we put more chairs into the circle than we think we need, right? There's another way of being open, right? Spaces, a porous circle is still open. Could this make a late entrance a little easier, maybe? Could it make it easier for me when I facilitate to offer my welcome a little more authentically? Might it even by extension help the person coming in to actually feel that welcome? Maybe. Opening the circle ahead of time instead of widening it in the moment. Proactive welcome. So to move out of metaphor mode, what does that look like? I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. Big picture wise, right? Big vision wise, I think it means getting comfortable with not knowing for sure. It means getting comfortable with not knowing who's going to walk in the door. It means practicing words and actions that can land well no matter who it is we're talking with. Maybe it means trying things out and seeing what happens, getting comfortable with the discomfort of doing things differently once in a while. I catch glimpses of some of these things sometimes here at Reeb because we are a congregation of people who is very concerned with this. We want to be welcoming. We think of ourselves as welcoming. And I'm not saying we're not. Like, let's be clear here. I'm not saying we're not. I'm saying we can always do more. So I catch glimpses and I hear ideas, and usually the glimpses that I catch and the ideas that I hear are a first step with this general goal, right, of being more welcoming, but no fully formed picture of what the end result looks like. And that makes sense. We know we want to be welcoming to everyone. We know we want all kinds of people to feel and know they belong here. But we're not necessarily sure what Reeb will look like because we don't know who everyone is. So here are some of the ideas that have caught my mind and my ear lately. Some of this comes out of a board retreat conversation that happened yesterday. Where we are talking about rebuilding the energy and the belonging in this congregation. And one of the things that came up was different styles of worship. What would it feel like to be comfortable shouting out amen if you agree with something? What would it feel like to clap in appreciation of things that we hear or see or are a part of? It can mean thinking about doing things in ways we never have before, and maybe learning about what other people's, what our folks' skills are, so that we can help do things we've never done before. I'm hosting a virtual dinner party next month. I'm going to share a recipe, invite people to Zoom in, and we're going to cook together. Is anyone going to come? I have no idea. But I'll have fun, and maybe other people will too. Last week, we invited our families into a gathering to ask for help, to collaborate and co-create to help revision and rebuild our family ministry and RE program. And out of that came a structure that we're going to try that we've never done before. We will see how it goes, and we will adapt. When I talked with Susan electronically about this service, she reflected this. If we want to open the circle, we need to be willing to do things in different ways, hear things we aren't used to, and question our assumptions and the things we believe are just plain true, or the way things work best. It's dangerous work, she said, that requires destruction and transformation. But creates something completely new. And to that, I say yes. That means that trust is one of the most important parts of making open circles. Like the trust I put in you a little while ago to hold my confession of having less than generous feelings at times in some spaces. One of the first things necessary to open the circle is to know that we're in this together, that we can trust, and that needs to be learned, right? That's why I chose the story I offered before to remind us of that deep dependence on each other. I am because we are. So we belong to ourselves. At its surface, this reading might feel like kind of the opposite of the message I have been preaching so far this morning, right? That our sense of who we are comes from our individual selves. That is not, I am because we are. This idea is the dominant one, right? The one we've grown up with as part of the culture of cisgender, heterosexual patriarchy and white supremacy that is the water we swim in this country. Our individualism is a primary value in our culture. My question then, dear ones, is where does this idea that we can regulate one another's bodies come from? If we are indeed individuals and autonomous and responsible for ourselves, why are people with uteruses vulnerable to the misguided idea that someone else can control what's inside them? Why is it so hard to be a person who knows their gender to be something other than what's assumed by looking at them? If our culture holds this value of individualism so tightly, why do people believe they can control the rights to abortion and to gender-affirming treatment? This is a conversation I want to have with you all. I'm not going to answer that question. The conversation I want to have with you all, and it was suggested to me today, it was suggested to me that I do this today. This was the original reading for this service. I have to admit to not having capacity for that, for anything other than to ask those questions right now. And I will share that we are looking for a guest speaker for next month who will talk very explicitly about it. I will say this much. There are seven principles that Unitarian Universalists affirm and promote. They are bookended by two: the inherent worth and dignity of every person and the interdependent web of existence, of which we're all a part. We live in the intersection of those principles. We are not simply individuals, and it is not as simple as I am, because we are. We believe that practicing them together is part of the answer. This reading expresses this idea fully. We can live knowing that we belong to each other, that we cannot survive without community, and knowing that we belong to ourselves at the same time. It's a both and. It is not an either or, and we get to decide, each of us, what we need. In reflecting on that electronically, Susan said to me, maybe belonging comes from owning, not just renting or being allowed to remain in your space. Owning your space and not just renting it, acting as if you have the right to ask for and make changes. It comes from co-creating the place and circumstances where you belong, not just to yourself or to the place, but also to all of the people and other beings whose existence connects with yours in the place where you belong. Interbeing is our natural state, whether we realize it or not. To that I say again, yes. This is where the intersection of our collective and individual ways of being lie. I am because we are, because I am because we are. May it be so, and may we be so.